Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you got for us, Bill?
Well, you know, we got a sponsor this hour. It's Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right off I-5. And if you need a John Deere tractor, John Deere attachments, mowers, they've got it all. Shirts, hats, toys. Yeah, they got a nice showroom up there. Go up and browse around, find something. And you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da.
There you go.
So let's see. Today is May the 9th, 2021, be Mother's Day. So,
happy Mother's Day to all those mothers out there.
I'd say same to you, but that would make it weird.
Yeah, that'd be kind of weird.
See, Travis is laughing. I said that to a guy at church yesterday. Bill goes, "What the heck? Couldn't you just say thank you?" I'm like, caught me off guard.
Yeah, it was a conversation killer. Guy looked at her like,
He kind of laughed and looked nervous and walked away. He was wearing a mask, though, so he could have been laughing.
He had white gloves on, too, so, you know.
I know.
Who knows?
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So he kind of chuckled, but I think he was I choose to believe under the mask he was chuckling.
Yeah.
Because I was chuckling. Made me laugh. Had a little small audience there. They thought it was funny. And all I need is a small audience.
All she needs is a small audience.
Doesn't have to be a big audience. I'm not greedy.
Let it rip.
Anybody's laughing.
No
keep
filter.
Going. It continued on at the grocery store, as it should. You know what? People are having a hard time having fun. We got to get them back in the swing of things. What the heck?
Yeah, leave them happier than they were when you got there.
Exactly. It's like Girl Scouting, only different. And since they've become environmentalists, I mean, maybe we just start our own. Let's start our own deal.
That's the way it was when that would make it weird if I was in Girl Scouts.
Yeah. You'd be one of those people I used to investigate. Let's see. What else was I going to say? Oh, you know what? Little unsolicited free market plug. If you don't have a Sleep Number bed, you're blowing it. I'm not kidding you. Those guys are the greatest. You got to go over there and try it. All you have to do is just do the little. It's not an experiment. That's probably not a good plug for them. But it's one of the Sleep Number beds you can lay on, and then they run the numbers, and then you can really tell. But you know what? Those guys. Most companies, they give you most companies don't give you free money, actually, if you send somebody to go get their product. But my sister bought the bed, so I had some free money. Well, my free money was going to expire. I didn't even know. And they called me up and said, "Hey, you have free money. You want to spend it on some stuff?" Got free sheets and everything.
Quality outfit.
They don't forget about you either. Nope. We bought the bed like 7 years ago. They still like us. It's pretty great.
Yeah,
can't go wrong. All right. So, as it gets hotter in the year and you're looking for things to do inside, run by the Sleep Number store and have them tell you what your sleep number is, and then you'll be fish on. You too can sleep well on. And now they have a number. We don't have that kind. It's a good thing. But they have the kind where they gauge your sleep, and then they tell you like a sleep score. I knew that was going to be a problem. My sister and her husband are super competitive. So, of course, now they're having a sleep wars. They're not getting much rest. They're trying to sleep harder and better so that they can beat the other one on the sleep number. I'm like,
yeah, then the bed rats them out. They aren't really sleeping.
Oh, my God. Probably wearing sneakers to bed, too, so they can outrace each other. Goofballs. So, I'm not getting any high sign from in there. That's Dr. Peter Pry on there. He is? Yeah. Oh.
There we go.
Well, for heaven's sake.
Great fascination.
That's why we love you.
I'm not totally sure I'm going to segue into the China-India blackout war.
Well, I have a more interesting topic for us to talk about anyway.
You do? You switch it up?
Well, yes. There's a... My computer went on the fritz this past week.
Oh, that's always helpful.
Typing an article, and so I've been... not able to communicate with you and others, excuse me, for a while.
Oh.
And so I had wanted to send you, like, my latest article.
Nice.
On the great ICBM debate that's going on in Washington that is really, if I had a point, pick out arguably the most important national security issue that is going to be decided within the next few months. And it could affect the future of Western civilization. to be blunt about it, it's whether or not the United States is going to keep its land-based, its ICBM force.
Is this your Washington Times article?
Yes, but there was another article that I wrote after that. But, yeah, did you get the Washington Times article?
I did get the Washington Times one, but
okay,
and I
great.
Did link it to the page. But you know what? Whatever you send, is your computer fixed?
No, my computer isn't fixed.
It's
not going to be fixed until at least Thursday.
Wow.
So I'm sort of on a mini vacation. So without my computer, I'm cut off from the world. I can't write. And
I understand Joe Biden can give you the name of a great computer store that fix that right up for you.
No, that's Hutter.
That's Hutter.
That's Hutter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Hutter's
right.
The one with all the connections there in technology. Oh, my gosh. Well, Will, when you send it to us, we'll link it. How's that?
Sure. We can, we can go wherever you want. But, yeah, the Washington Times article captured the gist of it. But I'd like to talk about that, too.
Yes, tell us.
We could start off talking about the situation that we just came through with the threats of blacking out the United States during the Ukrainian crisis. But whatever you like.
We'll just follow along. How's
that?
Yeah,
that sounds good. Let's talk.
We'll do what we usually do. We'll just follow along. We're passengers
all right,
on the bus.
I'm talking about the ICBMs because that's, I think that's the more immediate issue.
Okay.
In fact, it's considered among people who care about national security here in Washington, an all-hands-on-deck emergency. And not just I, but a lot of my colleagues who spent professional lifetimes, studying nuclear weapons and strategy have been publishing articles in the hope that the Democrats and the Biden administration can be persuaded not to go over the cliff when it comes to our intercontinental ballistic missiles. And this includes the commander of STRATCOM and many senior, current senior Department of Defense officials, as well as retired officials, all united in a phalanx to try to persuade them to do the right thing here. And to give some background, maybe I should start off by explaining to the audience what an ICBM is, because some people may not know. Our nuclear deterrent is called a triad. And it has three legs or three components to it. One of them is the strategic bombers, and they're the most flexible part of our strategic triad because they can carry conventional or nuclear weapons, and they can be recalled. And today, unlike during the Cold War, our strategic bomber force is not on alert. You know, it's not even on strip alert. You know, it doesn't have weapons uploaded. And it takes about 3 days to mobilize the strategic bomber force. And then we have our ballistic missile submarines. You know, and they are about a third of that force is at sea, on patrol at sea. You know, we've got a fleet of about 14 ballistic missile submarines, and about three or four of them are usually at sea. The rest of them are at port. And they are considered our survivable strategic reserve. You know, those submarines at sea purportedly, you know, are the least vulnerable leg of the triad. And if you can generate the whole submarine force and put all 14 boats at sea, then all of them are supposed to be invulnerable to attack. I personally don't believe that, but that's kind of the official position that the Navy takes, that once they're generated and put to sea, they're not vulnerable to attack. And the purpose of the submarine force is really not to be used. They are what we call an intra-war deterrent. So if a nuclear war were to start, you know, we wouldn't necessarily use our ballistic missile submarine force except as a threat to hold at risk the enemy's most valuable targets so that they would be deterred from attacking our most valuable targets, especially our cities. So that's why we want our ballistic missile submarines to be as secure and safe as possible when they're deployed at sea, because they're sort of the last line of defense for protecting, deterring an enemy from attacking our cities. Then there are the ICBMs, the intercontinental ballistic missiles. These are based on land. You know, they're based in low population states like in North and South Dakota and Montana. They're spread in over the West. There's 400 of them. They're called the Minuteman III ICBM. Each one carries a single warhead, and each one is in a hardened concrete silo, a missile silo. It's like a little fortress, and it's hardened to withstand almost anything but a near nuclear hit. And the silo is made of concrete. It can stand 2,000 pounds per square inch, you know, which is you'd have to get a nuclear warhead pretty close to cause that kind of overpressure. It's got a very heavy, like a 1 yard thick, almost solid steel and concrete lid, you know, over it. And in an emergency, when this thing is going to launch, there's an explosive charge that would drive the lid off, and the missile would then launch. And a missile's can be launched very quickly. In fact, the Minuteman is called the Minuteman because it can be launched in a few minutes once it gets the emergency action message. And it's the most ready part of our nuclear forces. Over 95% of the intercontinental ballistic missiles are ready to launch in a few minutes, all the time, every day, 24/7, for years and years. And there they are to deter an enemy surprise attack, so that, you know, if they try to do a nuclear Pearl Harbor on us, these missiles are ready to go to hit them back and therefore deter a surprise attack. And groups like the Union of Concerned Scientists, the Federation of American Scientists, the National Threat Initiative, groups that are basically anti-nuclear activist groups, you know, these groups hate all U.S. nuclear weapons. Mind you, I don't say they hate all nuclear weapons. They would say they hate all nuclear weapons. But as a practical matter, they never protest any modernization or anything that's going on in Russia, China, North Korea. It's only when the United States tries to modernize our nuclear weapons that they complain. And their bright ideas are always about what, the United States unilaterally giving up some part of its nuclear weapons. So that's why I say these groups don't hate nuclear weapons. They seem to be perfectly fine with Russian and Chinese and North Korean nuclear weapons. But it's U.S. nuclear weapons they have a problem with. And all through the Cold War, you know, these people were all for U.S. unilateral nuclear disarmament. And if we had listened to them, we would have lost the Cold War for sure. But they've never gone away, and they've never changed their minds. And now they have the ear of the Democrat Party. And these groups have become a really important part of the political and intellectual base of the Democrat Party. And a lot of them are actually being hired on to the Biden administration.
Oh, dear.
In very important positions, you know, where they will influence our nuclear strategy and our nuclear force structure in the future. So the Biden administration is just beginning, and they don't even have all these people in position yet. You know, we're really still dealing with, you know, the aftermath of the Trump administration, where the Department of Defense is concerned. You know, most of these people have been, that are in government now, have been held over from the Trump administration. And they're the ones that are protesting this idea about getting rid of U.S. ICBMs unilaterally. And Adam Smith, I've talked about this before in the show, I predicted in a report last year that I published that the Democrat Party, that if the Democrats took Congress and or if we got a Democrat president, they would try to dismantle the U.S. ICBM for us unilaterally. And that's basically what they're trying to do. Adam Smith is one of the leaders of this in Congress. He's, as chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, he's one of the most powerful Democrats in Washington. In fact, he's the third most powerful Democrat, only after Senator Reid, who's the Democrat who runs the Senate Armed Services Committee, and after President Biden himself. You know, Adam Smith is number three. And
that's terrifying.
Leaders like AOC and Elizabeth Warren, you know, they want to get rid of the ICBMs too. Now, feel free to interrupt me with questions or whatever, because I'm going to be just going on this.
No, that's all right. We do have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, you can continue to go on and on. We kind of moved our breaks around so we didn't have to keep cutting in all the time, because we're going to go at
that's fine.
At the 20 minutes after and 20 minutes till. How's that? Instead of every 5 seconds.
Fine. Whenever you want to take a break, just let me know.
All right. We're going to be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He's the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and Director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Both of those are congressional advisory boards, and we'll tell you more after the next break. We're just going to bleed out the bio, I guess, rather than do it at the beginning since we got off to a weird start. And we've done a bunch of shows with him, actually. They are all linked up on the website. You can find that at We the People Radio.
.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Well, we're on today with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and we always learn new things, lots of new things. I did change what's on the page today, Dr. Pry, to America's National Security Hinges on ICBMs, your article there from the Times. And when you send me the new one, I'll attach it. So no problem. We'll be up to speed.
Okay, thank you so much. Yeah, I preferred my original. I'm trying to remember my original title on that. They're always changing my titles on those articles.
Huh.
Right.
When you send it to me, you should send it with the regular title, and I'll make sure I post it with the regular title.
I will. This the next one. I had another article published on The Hill, which I wasn't able to send you, and they gave it some god awful title. The original title was Risky Business, the Great ICBM Debate, you know.
Well, that's fun. What'd they call it?
Something, my next, I can't even remember. It's so unforgettable.
Something boring.
But,
Rocket Man.
Right. I've got a third one coming out that I haven't published yet. I haven't been able to publish it because my computer's broken. But as soon as it's fixed, I will send it to Newsmax. And it's going to be titled, How to Start and Lose a Nuclear War, because what they are planning to do by getting rid of the ICBM, it would basically be an excellent strategy for starting and losing a nuclear war. If you wanted to start and lose a nuclear war, then you should do what the Democrats are trying to do, you know, which is unilaterally get rid of our ICBMs. And why do they want to get rid of our ICBMs? Why is the Federation of American Scientists, of concerned scientists, and Elizabeth Warren and Adam Smith and the Biden administration so keen on getting rid of U.S. ICBM force unilaterally? And that's because they've been convinced that the very virtues that ICBMs have, that the fact that they're ready to be launched in a few minutes, you know, that they're always ready 24/7 to go, it poses a great threat of accidental nuclear war. You know, that there could be false warning on a radar or something like that, you know, that causes us to accidentally start a nuclear war. And therefore, we need to get rid of the ICBMs. And hopefully, everybody will follow our good example and get rid of their ICBMs.
I'm sure they'll totally do that. I believe
that. Of course they're not going to do
that. Much like global warming.
It's just so ridiculous, you know. And I part company with some of my fellow conservatives a little bit on this business of accidental nuclear war. You know, a lot of them, especially at the Pentagon, play down that risk too much. There is a possibility of accidental nuclear war. We ought not to ignore that. There have been cases of false warning that have created some pretty frightening situations. And that's all the more reason for us to be conscientious about managing our ICBM force responsibly. But if you look at the history of, you know, of, and this is one of the reasons I wrote my report, too, the report that I published last year called Surprise Attack, ICBMs and the Real Nuclear Threat. If you look at the history of false warnings and the greater risk of accidental nuclear war, it's a lot less from our side. Sure, there's some small chance of an accidental nuclear war, but the smallest chance is on our side. If you're really worried about accidental nuclear war, worry about North Korea or Russia or China starting it. You know, those countries are interested. They have first strike philosophies. You know, their nuclear strategies are based on beating the other side to the draw. In fact, on surprise attack. So they're not even if we're not trying to draw the weapon ourselves, their idea is, you know, to win a nuclear war by taking us completely by surprise. And they have this paranoid view that we have the same strategy, which is not true. We don't plan to do nuclear Pearl Harbors on anybody, but they plan to do nuclear Pearl Harbors on us. And also because of the very aggressive, paranoid nature of those civilizations, their strategic culture is much more inclined, you know, to be a hot-button culture when it comes to their ICBM force and nuclear forces generally. So the biggest risk of accidental nuclear war, which is a real concern, I think, much more of a concern than the Pentagon would like to admit, you know, but the main threat from accidental nuclear war doesn't come from us. It comes from the bad guys. It comes from Russia, China, North Korea, you know, when it wasn't that long ago, you know, that we had a really close call with Russia. I wrote a whole book that talked about the 1995 nuclear war scare when Boris Yeltsin, who was the friendliest president of Russia, the friendliest leader of Russia we ever had, that he almost pushed the button on us over a mistake in a Norwegian meteorological rocket that was launched. And their general staff thought that it was an American sub-launched ballistic missile coming in to do an EMP attack, and they had to beat us to the draw. That was just in 1995. It was 25th of January, 1995. And it was the closest we ever came to a nuclear war. So those are the guys. That's the kind of thing that can happen. And back in 2017, we've talked about this on the show before. You know, we were so concerned about Kim Jong-un delivering on his threats to strike us. You know, that the Secretary of Defense was sleeping in his gym clothes and had command and control equipment in his bedroom and being followed around in his car everywhere he went because it was a genuine nuclear crisis where we were concerned that Kim Jong-un might get trigger-happy with his ICBMs. So, yeah, there's a threat of accidental nuclear war. There's also a bigger threat of deliberate nuclear war coming from these guys. And the idea is whether the war is accidental or deliberate, what posture do you want to have that's going to minimize all of these possibilities? And, you know, if you think about it a little bit, you know, it's clear that by getting rid of our ICBM force, you're actually making the possibility of nuclear war by accident or nuclear war deliberately much greater. You know, you greatly increase the risk. And why do I say that? Oh, before I depart, I also just want to add a few other things about our ICBM posture. I mean, the way we've bent over backwards to try to reduce the risk of accidental nuclear war, for example. We have multiple safeguards built into our ICBM systems. We have even detargeted our ICBMs. That means that they are not aimed at targets in any adversary country. Our ICBMs are aimed at broad ocean areas. So if one of them were to launch accidentally, or if the whole force were to launch accidentally, it wouldn't be targeted on an adversary target. They'd go into the ocean.
Well, that's nice of us.
Yeah, and we have demerved our ICBMs too, because when you merve an ICBM, the main reason to merve an ICBM is so that one missile can destroy more than one target, and that's a first strike posture. That's the kind of thing you want to do if you are planning to use your nuclear missiles first.
Not being a missile expert, how do you use one missile to hit more than one target?
Well, you put multiple warheads on the missile.
Oh, and then they just scurry off and do their job.
Three used to have three warheads on it. And each warhead was independently targeted. So the missile would go up, it would release those three warheads, and each of the warheads would go to a separate target. So one missile would be used to destroy three targets.
Interesting.
And we could have put up more heavily MIRVed missiles than that. And in fact, Ronald Reagan did. We briefly had a missile called the Peacekeeper that had 10 warheads on it. And the reason we did that is because we were so afraid of the Russian SS-18, you know, which is clearly a first strike weapon. It had 10 warheads. So the idea was, well, if they're going to have a 10 warhead ICBM, we're going to have one too, you know, to put them in the same awkward situation. And maybe we can, you know, use it for arms control purposes to try to get them to give up, you know, their big threatening SS-18 called the Satan 1, you know, 10 warhead missile. Well, you know, the left and the Democrats were so much against the Peacekeeper that we never ended up deploying more than 50 of them. The original plan was to deploy 200, but we briefly deployed about 50 of them, and then they got dismantled. And we didn't even try to trade them off for arms control purposes, you know. And that was really an unwise thing. But the technical answer to your question is that's how you destroy more than one target with an ICBM.
Hmm.
You put multiple warheads on it, and each warhead is independently targeted.
I thought warheads were like dumb things that just rode along on missiles. I didn't realize they had brains of their own.
They are dumb things that just ride along on the missiles. But there's a computer called a post-boost vehicle that's a smart thing that's pre-programmed, and it knows when to kick those warheads off so that Isaac Newton takes over, and the dumb warhead will follow the forces of gravity to go to to follow the proper trajectory to very accurately, you know, strike a separate target.
Mm.
You know, so you can strike many targets that are geographically very far apart with just one missile. And the Russians have got, so we used to have, we never, except for the Peacekeeper, we never put a lot of MIRVed warheads on our ICBM force, because we didn't want to pose a first strike threat to our adversaries. And we hoped they would follow our good example. And we hoped that that would sort of be a technological proof to them that, no, we don't plan to start World War III. We don't plan to do a nuclear Pearl Harbor on you. Look at us. We're not heavily MIRVing our ICBMs. And to reinforce that message, we actually de-MIRVed our ICBMs. So none of our ICBMs carry... none of the land-based ICBMs carry multiple warheads anymore. Each one has only got one warhead. But, you know, the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, they either don't care or they don't believe us, or probably a combination of both, you know, because they continue to heavily MIRV up their ICBMs so they can serve the purpose of a first strike. As I mentioned, the Russians have... they've still got the SS-18. They've got a more advanced version of the SS-18 called the SS-18. I think it's the Mod 4 that they've got, and that's the Satan 1. And, you know, each of those missiles carries 10 warheads. And the Chinese have in recent years, deployed their version of the Peacekeeper. Basically, it's a mobile version of what our Peacekeeper used to be, and it carries 10 warheads, too. And it's mobile, which makes it even better for surprise, because that part of the reason you make an ICBM mobile is so that it's more survivable, so that you can move it around. An adversary has to figure out, well, where are they hiding that ICBM? So that's part of the reason for making it mobile, and that's what mostly the press talks about. Oh, it's mobile so that it can be protected. But there's another reason to make an ICBM mobile, and that's for purposes of surprise attack, because we know where the silos are located. And so when we get an infrared signal coming out of a silo, we know that that silo has launched. But we don't know where these mobile ICBMs are. And so it contributes to your ability to achieve surprise, because we've got to figure out, if we get an infrared signal from our satellite, you know, is that actually a missile launch coming out of there? You know, because we know there's no silo there, but maybe it's a gas pipeline explosion. You know, maybe it's a chemical factory explosion, or maybe it's a forest fire. You know, is it some intense infrared event that's not a nuclear launch? So a heavily MIRVed ICBM that's mobile is an even bigger first strike threat than a silo-based ICBM. And the Russians and Chinese both have ICBMs right now that carry 10 warheads each. That means with just 50 missiles, you can deliver 500 warheads in 30 minutes or less against all of the targets. You can attack all our ICBM silos, all our bomber bases, all our ballistic missile submarine bases, and a bunch of command and control nodes. You can do everything you need to do in a disarming nuclear first strike. Now, it's not going after our cities. In that first strike, they're not trying to destroy cities. They're trying to destroy our nuclear retaliatory forces. So then they can hold our cities hostage and say, surrender, or we're going to start going after your cities, and you can't do anything about it because we've disarmed you. That's the strategy. And so when you see a bad guy like Russia and China building heavily MIRVed ICBMs, well, there's really only one explanation for that, you know, because they plan to strike you with a first strike, a disarming first strike. And North Korea is going to get into the game, too. You know, just in this past Christmas, they displayed the biggest mobile ICBM in the world, and most analysts think it's going to be their first MIRVed ICBM. So even North Korea is going to start getting into the MIRVed ICBM game. So nobody's following our good example that we set by demerving our ICBMs. In fact, and nobody's going to follow our example of if we get rid of our ICBMs, we're going to be dead ducks. You know, because the biggest part of the U.S. target set are these 400 Minuteman III ICBMs that are in these little fortresses, these little hardened ICBM silos. It takes a sophisticated, coordinated, well-timed nuclear strike to take those out. Certainly not impossible to do it, but it's a big attack, and you've got to, you know, be serious, and you know you're going to be getting into a nuclear war when you take that step, you know, a big, serious war with the United States when you take that step. If you succeed, you'll have won the war, okay? But it's obviously a big, risky thing to do.
Yeah.
Get rid of
you
those
only
four
get to
ICBMs.
Fumble that ball one time.
Right. Get rid of those 400 ICBMs, as Elizabeth Warren and Adam Smith want to do, and the Union of Concerned Scientists, and we have five targets left, okay? Five targets. Three strategic bomber bases on which the bombers are not on alert, and two ballistic missile submarine bases where most of the submarines, two-thirds of them, are not on alert. That makes it so much easier, you know, to make a surprise attack on the United States that's going to succeed. You've only got to destroy five targets.
Yeah, and literally the whole country's not on alert. Wow.
Yeah, all the bombers would be destroyed, you know, because it takes 3 days to mobilize them. Two-thirds of the submarines would be destroyed right in port. And the only ones they would have to worry about are those three submarines at sea, three to four submarines at sea, which we almost certainly would not use, you know, because those submarines are not meant to be used. They're meant to deter an attack on our cities. If we started using those submarines at sea to attack their forces, what would we have left to deter a nuclear attack on our cities?
Yeah.
You know, so basically they'd win. Also, the submarines at sea can also be neutralized, you know, because people don't realize that. I mean, one of the fictions that is out there by the left, and the Navy promotes this myth as well, that all those submarines are invulnerable. We don't know that those submarines are invulnerable.
There's nothing that's invulnerable. I mean, that's a silly thing to say.
As soon as you start saying
that, everybody knows that.
You know you're setting yourself up to a disaster. Those submarines are about as invulnerable as the Maginot Line that the French hinged their hopes on in World War II. That was supposed to be invulnerable, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the submarines are sort of our Maginot Line, because a lot of people foolishly believe that they are invulnerable, including Adam Smith and Elizabeth Warren and a lot of people in the Biden administration.
Well, the fact that Adam Smith and Elizabeth Warren are making any decisions at all doesn't really speak highly of our electorate. But we have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back, obviously. because we've still got an hour or so change left.
Unless we're
cactus. Yeah. Unless if you hear a loud noise,
or if we come back in Morse code.
You know, and by the way, don't bother hiding under your desk. That was all. That was all BS too.
Duck and cover.
Duck and cover. So, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is our guest this hour. And here's another little blurb. He served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, and the House Armed Services Commission. He was also an intelligence officer with the CIA, responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy. So just in case you thought he's just a smarty pants, he read a lot of books. No, he wrote a lot of books, and he is a smarty pants, unlike Elizabeth Warren and Adam, what's his name, who should never have the word intelligence connected to their, their names ever at all.
Yeah.
So if you thought the Biden administration was just doing dumb stuff, it's a whole new level of dumb. We will come back and tell you more bad things they're planning on doing. And, you know, hey, it's better to be informed than surprised, I guess. So you are listening to We the People, and you can find all this information about our guest and topics and the articles that he has written at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Absence of good, good intelligence and all that. I suppose maybe Elizabeth Warren and Adam Smith figure they're going to read their mind, huh?
Yeah,
that's how they're going to know when something bad's going to happen.
We'll be nice, so they'll be nice.
That's going to keep us all safe.
Yeah.
Well, they have this view, a view that's shared by the left, Union of Concerned Scientists. They assume that everybody, and Elizabeth Warren actually said this recently in defense of this idea about giving up the ICBMs, that a nuclear war, everybody knows a nuclear war is unwinnable. Everybody knows that, that a nuclear war is impossible. So why are we spending lots of money on preparations for nuclear war, that we can afford, since she assumes the Chinese and the Russians and North Koreans think just like us about nuclear war being unwinnable, nuclear war is impossible. Well, we'll take this first step and do better than Obama, by drastically altering our posture. In fact, Adam Smith didn't want to get, in addition to getting rid of ICBMs, what the Union of Concerned Scientists really wanted, in addition to that, they wanted to get rid of the Strategic Bomber Force, too, so that there would no longer be a triad. It would go to a monad of submarines.
Wow.
So all of our defense would be based just on the submarine force, those three or four submarines that we have at sea every day. And,
And so what exactly is the Union of Concerned Scientists? Is this like the climate change thing where 97% of them agree with each other?
Yeah, that's right. Most of them are not scientists. Most of them are.
if you want
to stretch the definition of most of them are academics and political scientists. And political activists, and don't just like the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. Oh, people who know about atomic science and are nuclear weapons designers must belong to that. Subscribe to the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. No, not at all. Almost none of them know anything really about nuclear weapons, and most of them are not even physicists. But they're political scientists and academics and hacks and A lot of them are graduate students.
Oh,
you know,
that makes me feel better.
You know, student activists. You know, who are leading the charge on these various extreme positions. But a lot of them, you know, a lot of the Biden administration talent, you know, so-called talent, you know, is being recruited from the ranks of the Union of Concerned Scientists, Federation, people who've affiliated with them, or the Nuclear Threat Initiative is another one of them. I'm trying to remember the name of the lady. There was a, drawing a blank, maybe it's a mental blank, but there was some lady, who was, recently affiliated with the Nuclear Threat Initiative that wants to decrease our reliance on nuclear weapons for nuclear deterrence. And she has been put, she replaced my good friend, Lisa Gordon Haggerty, as the director of the National Nuclear Security Agency. NNSA is one of the most important organizations for nuclear deterrence, for the U.S. nuclear deterrent, because NNSA is responsible for maintaining the reliability and safety and modernity of our nuclear weapons. And so we've got an anti-nuke person who was just recently associated with Nuclear Threat Initiative, who's been appointed by the Biden administration to run that agency. And, you know, the difference between it is going to be night and day, because when Lisa Gordon Haggerty was in charge of it, my goodness, what a smart, courageous lady she was, because for decades, as we've talked about on this show before, the United States has been patching up our nuclear weapons. Our nuclear weapons are 50, 60 years old. They're based on old-fashioned Cold War designs. You know, they're not modern designs the way the Russians and the Chinese have got. Even the North Koreans have got some modern designs that we don't have. And Lisa, for the first time, was managed to get, you know, through a very resistant bureaucratic and political process, said, we're going to build a new weapon, a real new weapon that has a new design, and it's going to have new parts, and it's going to be built from the ground up, a real new weapon, just the way the Russians and Chinese are doing it. And that's probably going to be canceled by the Biden administration. But I give a salute to Lisa Gordon Haggerty. Most Americans probably never heard of her, but she was an example of one of the few really good Trump appointees. Most of them were not good, but she was an example of one of the few, because I've complained about the Trump administration before in terms of not knowing how to govern, mm-hmm. but, you know, one of the ways, I think that's a really good example, that how Lisa was thrown in to be the director of the NNSA she inherited the whole agency from the Obama administration. And, you know, they didn't change out the staff, so she had to go there and work with a bunch of Obama holdovers. You know, the president should have given her carte blanche to retire or fire or relocate those people and bring in her own people, people who shared his vision and supported the president's policies. So just imagine being all by yourself, you know, running an agency of 15,000 people that are maintaining the nuclear deterrent and managing to turn that ocean liner around and force them to do the right thing. No small feat, you know.
No.
But most of the Trump people who went in to run the Department of Energy or the Department of Homeland Security were put in the same situation, and most of them got captured and end up implementing policies that went against what the president wanted. You know, because they're being held hostage by the staff. You know, they didn't have their own experts working within those departments and agencies who shared the president's vision. And but going back to the ICBM again.
Yeah, with not to get off the subject, but, you know, you're talking about an outdated ICBM force. Has anything been talked about on the launch failure last week when they tried to do a test and had to abort it? Was that a failure in the missile, or was it? Are they giving out any information on that?
Well, in a way, it was a success within the missile, but it's another example of how we have bent over backwards to try to avoid nuclear accidents and the possibility of accidental nuclear war. you know, the system, the missile system itself aborted the launch because it detected that something was wrong. Hmm. And so we've designed our missiles so that when something goes wrong, the missile doesn't launch, precisely so that you don't have the missile go someplace it's not supposed to go to. So that's the bright side of it. But on the downside of it, you're absolutely right. The fact that that missile did self-abort, okay, what does that say about the readiness of our ICBM force?
Exactly.
You know, and this was from Vandenberg. You know, we're, unlike the Russians, you know, I think when the Russians have got a more reliable, not only because their missiles are more modern than ours, but they never, Vandenberg, you have to understand, the audience doesn't understand this, you know, it's not part of our operational ICBM force. You know, Vandenberg, those, we have a special test facilities for testing our missiles. We don't launch the missiles out of operational launchers. You know, we'll take a Minuteman out of an operational launcher, transport it to Vandenberg, and then the scientists and engineers go over it, you know, and we try to make sure everything is in working order, and then they launch it, all right? That's not exactly a fair test, you know. It's not like you're taking a random missile. You know, they're going through extraordinary efforts to make sure that missile works. And the missile didn't work, you know, after all of that. You know, fortunately, it aborted. When the Russians test the missile, you know, they test it right out of an operational launcher. And they have the missile launch crew do the launch, not some special team of scientists and the engineers who designed that missile, of Lockheed Martin or something like that. You know, it's an actual realistic test of their ICBMs. Same thing with China. You know, when they do their missile tests, it's a realistic test done by combat crews out of an operational launcher. And that's a lot more impressive than the way we test our stuff. So that's a bad sign. And it's not surprising that the missile failed. I mean, this is what the commander of STRATCOM has been testifying to Congress about. And it's good that you mentioned that because it segues right into the next part of what I wanted to discuss. You know, that the Minuteman III ICBM is 50 years old. You know, it was originally designed to last only 10 years. It was first deployed in 1970.
It's a credit to workmanship.
1970. It was never intended to go past 1980. And we've been patching that missile up. And you know, it's at the very last life extension program that, you know, and STRATCOM commander has been warning Congress, you know, when this thing is at the end of its last life extension program, that's it. You know, we can't keep this missile running anymore.
Nice. And that's what we're counting on.
We need a new ICBM. And
let's carry that over into the next hour. Can you believe it? We've successfully burned 60 minutes. So we are going to come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and I found the perfect song for Elizabeth Warren and Adam Smith because I think this is what they're channeling for the future plans of our ICBM program. Feel free to steal this and use it in your material, Dr. Pry. I'm sure it's going to come in handy. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Someday you wish upon a star. Wake up where the clouds are far behind. Be where trouble melts like lemon drops. High above the...
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape Machinery handles everything John Deere. Go up and see them. They also have Honda power products, including the generators, which generator season is right around the corner. And,
you mean PG&E shutting your power off season is right around the corner?
Yeah, PG&E and their turkey thawing program. so that's right around the corner. They also handle steel power products. So if you need any hedge trimmers, chainsaws, any of that kind of stuff, they've got it all in stock and ready to go. So go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. And that's spelled P-A-P-E machinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Well, good times. Thought we'd talk about something that was useful today. Things that are useful that should be in the news that nobody ever talks about. What is up with that?
Yeah, the difference between a airliner flying over and an ICBM.
I think
we all need to be able to tell the difference.
Well, let's face it. Most of us, you know, our knowledge of our weapons systems is fairly limited.
Yeah.
And really, where are you going to learn about that stuff? Here.
Last week
we were talking about how the stupidity of legalizing marijuana is destroying our rural areas. And we actually re-aired a program on that last week. That would have been May the whatever that was, May the 2nd or something. So if you missed that, I really do hope you'll go back and look at that show. And I do mean look at that show. Go to the website at wethepeopleradio.us. And there is a slideshow on there. And I keep adding things to the slideshow, pictures. To the slideshow of what is happening in our rural lands. So if you still know people or are people who think that, oh, legalizing marijuana, how wonderful, the crime will all go away. It's going to be so great. We're going to regulate it and tax it. It's going to be just like alcohol and cigarettes. It's like, all right, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but you're kind of an idiot. Go look at the pictures of what happens in the places where, yes, the cartels are still growing it illegally. So we have the Hmong, the Chinese, and the Russian cartel have moved in up there to a county with 44,000 people. And just in one area, you have like 10,000 cartel members. And the pictures, when you look, just go take a peek, because it looks like they built a town. You look at the difference between 2018 and 2020, and it's like, wow, look at that. L.A. sprung up in the middle of Siskiyou County. No, those are all greenhouses. They're estimating approximately 3,500 greenhouses. And these are 30 feet wide, 100 feet long greenhouses.
200 feet long. They're huge.
They're gigantic. The ones I saw, the ones I took pictures of were like 100 feet long. But, yeah, it's huge. There's nothing up there that's legal. Absolutely nothing. But the county did some ordinances last week, and they're cutting off the water to these folks. So now you will be hearing about the Asian persecution in Siskiyou County, because, of course, they're only cutting off the water to them because they're Asian. It has nothing to do with the fact that they're...
How are they going to flush their toilets?
That they're a criminal cartel.
They don't have toilets. They don't have toilets.
No, that's right. No trash service, no sewer service, nothing. So, if you're unclear on that topic, you should get clear on that. And if you do hear anything about how the Northern California counties are all a bunch of racists, I hope you go in and defend them. There are not enough people up there to defend themselves. And it's a crime wave of epic proportion. It's so bad that the small town of Yreka with 7,000 people in it is now up to like 26% crime. So you basically have a 1 in 4 chance of being affected by crime if you are in Yreka.
They had one of their strike teams surrounded last week, wasn't it?
Yeah. The sheriff's office pulled over a water truck, and before they get out, and the drivers are unlicensed, the trucks are unlicensed. I mean, there's just all sorts of problems. So anyway, while they're doing that, they had like 200 people came out of nowhere, had them surrounded, and they thought they were going to have like an armed confrontation. Eventually, it turned out okay, but it's going to get ugly and aggressive, and the big defense is racism, of course, the go-to card. So,
and it's just medicine.
Of course.
Yeah,
grown with chemicals. Be sure and zoom in on the pictures I took of the chemical containers too. You'll enjoy that. I don't even know what that stuff is. Dr. Pry maybe knows what it is, but I'm pretty sure none of it's legal in this country, and you can't store it like that. And it's going into the ground in the aquifer. So there isn't a deer for 50 miles. So I don't care what you like. If you like the environment, great. There's something for you. If you like animals, terrific. Look at the puppy that's tied to a tree with no food or water, chewing on a chemical container. If you want your kids to swim in a doughboy pool this summer and you can't find one, there's pictures in there for you. That's what they're mixing chemicals in. Pretty much something to piss off everybody. So please go take a look at that. Back to the topic at hand. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, let's see, what's the next phase of the operation here? We're going to get to the credentials here. He's got a PhD in history and archaeology and another PhD in strategic studies, which is what led him to the CIA. And in his free time, when his computer works and Hunter Biden isn't doing repairs for him, he's the author of numerous books, including The Power and the Light, which is the Congressional EMPs Commission War to Save America, 2001 to 2020, Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe, and Electric Armageddon, and a bunch of other ones. And I've got, I forgot to link them today. I will do that.
Yeah, do that.
I am remiss.
Yeah.
I will go back and I will link them because I do have them all in a handy-dandy link. You can go read all of them. So.
Well, when we broke, we were talking about the aged ICBM stockpile we have here and what we're doing about it or not doing about it.
Yeah, and the missile that's supposed to be 10 years old that's 50 years old.
Yeah.
Start with that again, Dr. Pry.
Yeah, because I don't know. I think you just have to put a new fuse on the bottom to light, don't you, when they're old? You just light them like a firecracker.
We're going to let Warren and Smith work on it.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm.
Right, before I go on with the Minuteman 3, I just can't help but comment about, you know, what you just described, the situation.
Uh-huh.
You know, it sounds like your part of the country is at risk of becoming like Mexico with the cartels dominating the area. You know, hundreds of people surrounding the police. If they get armed, wow.
They're armed. You know, they're heavily armed.
You know.
Yeah.
Right, but at least they're not killing the police yet.
No, they're killing each other. We did find a naked 19-year-old girl buried in a hole up there, so that's not good. And they're pretty sure, because the Chinese and the Hmong don't get along. It's kind of a catchy tune there. Travis, maybe you could write us a little song for that. They don't get along, and they're pretty sure they're killing each other up there, but nobody knows about that yet. They haven't reached out to touch any of the neighbors, but there aren't that many people who live up there. It's a quiet rural area, but it's estimated. How about this? It's estimated they're pulling. So, for the people who are going to get to shower with a friend this summer and get nasty notes from the water company and they can't wash their car and, I don't know, all the rest of the crazy stuff because we're busy letting all of our water in California out to the ocean right now for the fish, ostensibly, so that the humans can't use it. So while we're busy doing that, these guys are siphoning approximately 9.6 million gallons of water, per day to keep their dope crop alive. That's what they're cutting off. So I'm thinking cutting off 9.6 million gallons per day for, I'm going to give it 5 to 7 days. You're going to have a pretty sad-looking crop.
Yeah, but they in their infinite wisdom, are cutting off all the farmers in the Central Valley from growing real crops.
Yes.
So
we don't need food.
No, we don't need food. So, it's a crazy world right now.
Yeah.
Decline and fall of the Roman Empire.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Before I came on, I was reading rereading Suetonius's The Twelve Caesars.
Oh, Bill was just
about
reading
the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. Boy, it's just so how history repeats itself.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the new barbarians inside the gates already.
Yeah, I guess we should start having toga parties.
Right, you know. But going back to the Minuteman III, this aged missile, it was originally designed to last 10 years, and we deployed it back in 1970. So it wasn't supposed to last past 1980, but we've had a series of life extension programs patching it up to try to keep it going. And STRATCOM and the Department of Defense is, you know, in a panic, you know, because it's on its last legs, its last possible service extension life. You had mentioned how it failed the recent test at Vandenberg, you know, that the missile itself aborted because something was wrong. And, those missiles, when we take them out to Vandenberg, as I had mentioned before the break, you know, it's not like a real operational test because they know that this is going to be watched by the world, and so that missile is pampered and gone over, and it's not supposed to fail. Every launch from Vandenberg is supposed to be successful, you know, but this one wasn't, and that reflects really badly on the readiness of our Minuteman III force. Now, the Pentagon deserves a lot of blame here because they've been so wrapped around the axle of the war on terrorism for so long. You know, that they have not, they never invested the political capital that they should have with previous presidents, you know, including President Trump, to say, look, we really need to move faster on replacing our ICBMs and modernizing our ICBMs. And it's created this golden opportunity for the Democrats right now so that the anti-nuclear types like Adam Smith and Elizabeth Warren and those within the Biden administration could conceivably get rid of our ICBM force with very little political cost because of the situation that's come up. You know, the there's a replacement for the Minuteman III in the pipeline, which is unimaginatively, and it's just another example of, you know, whoever's in charge of the ICBM program at the Pentagon probably should be fired and replaced with somebody who has more common sense. But the replacement missile is called the Ground-Based Strategic Deterrent, GBSD. You know, there's a name you can really get out and get behind, right? I mean, you know, let's all, you know, agitate for the GBSD, you know. You know, why not call it the Minuteman IV? I mean, when the Kennedy administration first started the Minuteman series, it was deploying them, you know, the average American can understand, oh, it's a Minuteman, it's ready, it's serving this important purpose to defend us at any moment, any minute, right? So, you know, and in the last article I wrote, or the one that was published in The Hill, I ended it by asking them, please rename the GBSD Minuteman IV, you know, so that at least politically you're going to make it easier to sell. You know, not that I want to hand our adversaries, our political adversaries, any bright ideas, but if you think about GBSD, you know, it sounds like an unflattering anagram, because if you change the letters around a little bit, you know, it could be GDSB, and, you know, but I suppose this is family radio, so I can't explain what that acronym stands for, GDSB, but or maybe your audience can figure it out. So what a stupid, didn't anybody think about that, you know, before they decided to name it the GBSD? So, and it's not going to be ready for deployment. The first ground-based strategic deterrent, GBSD, won't come online until 2029, 9 years from now. So we've got to keep the Minuteman III going for another 9 years.
Oh, wow.
And what's at debate right now, this is why this is this just crucial, pivotal moment. You know, Winston Churchill, in his great magisterial history of World War II, you know, one of the books was called The Hinge of Fate. And it was titled that because there was this moment in World War II, you know, Battle of Stalingrad, Battle of Midway, you know, the turning point. It was by no means guaranteed we were going to win World War II, but there were crucial battles fought, you know, that were literally the hinge of fate for the future of Western civilization and mankind. And this could be it. In fact, that was my original title for the Washington Times article, The Hinge of Fate, ICBMs. And then instead they gave it some less imaginative title, because literally we do face, I mean, this decision could be the hinge of fate for Western civilization, you know, about whether that system, the GBSD, gets funded or not. You know, the Democrats really don't have to do much to get rid of our ICBM force, because the Pentagon has put us in a situation where all the Democrats have to do is not fund the GBSD or underfund it. And it will guarantee that we won't have a Minuteman III force in a relatively near future. The missile systems will just turn to junk. They could even provide themselves with political cover by saying, well, we agree with you that we want an ICBM force, but we don't want a new ICBM. We're going to do another life extension program for the Minuteman III, you know, which is a lie. I mean, because it's life can't be extended.
Because it can't.
And so you'll end up with just a junkyard of missiles sitting in the silos, you know, just like we've got the same problem with a lot of the warheads that are in our inventory, where a lot of our specialists question whether the warheads would really work anymore because they're so old. So this is just another one of those crucial moments, and the Pentagon hasn't been doing its job. I put a lot of blame on them.
I've got a lot of questions about that. How about this? Let's take a quick break. When we come back, it's just obviously your observation, but I want to know why the military and the Pentagon and all these guys have gone along with all this stuff, because you would think that, actually, you'd think that they want to have more missiles. You'd think they like that kind of thing, but, I mean, we're counting on them to like that kind of thing.
Yeah, but they
realize... Sounds like we got the wrong guys at the helm. Yeah,
I think they realize we're all going to be dead in 12 years from global warming anyway.
Oh, it's
so,
less now, because remember, that was a while ago.
Oh, yeah, that's we're down to 11 years.
Ticking.
So, yeah.
Not to put too fine a point on it. Yeah. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. We hope you will join us online and check out all the good shows we've got for the last 10 years. They are free to listen to, and you can find them at We the People Radio.
.us.
There we go. So what's wrong with our military, Dr. Pry? Why are they not... I get that they don't make policy necessarily, but it sounds like they're kind of rolling over for all this.
Well, look who's in charge.
Yeah.
Well, I think the problem is in our strategic culture. It's not just in the military, but it's in the... But it has affected our military. You know, the whole strategic culture of our civilization, those people who are, you know, supposed to be our professionals, our intellectual class, our defense intellectuals, outside and inside the military, you know, whether you include them in the think tanks, in the universities, and the military itself. The military, after all, is its officers, you know, come from our regular culture. You know, they go through to Harvard and Yale. They've passed through these areas. And the curriculums on thinking, how to think about nuclear weapons and strategy, you know, at West Point and the U.S. Army War College and elsewhere, U.S. Air Force Academy, you know, are heavily influenced by how the civilian Ivy League schools think about this, you know, and have always been. And there was a time, you know, when, I mean, most Americans, when they think about, well, how does our military think about nuclear weapons? You know, they think about movies like Dr. Strangelove, you know, and they think of our military officers as being like those kinds of officers who were nuclear warriors, you know. And there was a time when our military, when our strategic culture back in the 50s and 60s, you know, definitely understood nuclear war fighting, thought about nuclear war fighting. It was a primary focus of what the Joint Chiefs of Staff thought about, and it wasn't some kind of a subspecialty that was pushed off to the side that they didn't think about. But over time, you know, we've moved away from that. You know, the anti-nuclear views that exist in these more radical groups, you know, actually come out of a lot of our universities and have contaminated the way our military thinks about these things. You do have people who have the views of, you've got probably as many people serving in our military who have views similar to those of the Union of Concerned Scientists as you do who have views similar to Colin Gray, you know, one of the most profound strategic thinkers, you know, a person who really understood nuclear strategy. You know, there's probably as many people opposite to him, you know, the Elizabeth Warren and Adam Smith types serving in the Pentagon. And we, over time, you know, what there's sort of been a denuclearization of our military, denuclearization of the expertise. One of the things that happened was under the Clinton administration, there was an organization called the Defense Nuclear Agency, or DNA. A good friend of mine, Vice Admiral Robert Monroe, was one of the last directors of that. He's written a number of good articles warning about, you know, in the Hill, you know, about how our strategic culture has been damaged, because DNA used to produce our nuclear warriors, people who were expert not just in nuclear technology, but also, you know, were pretty deep thinkers about nuclear strategy. And they provided the cadres, the DNA provided the cadres who would serve as staff on the Joint Chiefs of Staff and on all of our military services. So there'd always be people there who understood nuclear weapons to remind these guys that, you know, we it's a nuclear world that we live in, and we need to be thinking about nuclear scenarios and exercising them. When DNA went away, that kind of cadre, the thousands of military officers who had that deep expertise in nuclear weapons and strategy, also went away. And Clinton replaced the Defense Nuclear Agency with a thing that sounded less threatening. It didn't have the word nuclear in it, called the Defense Threat Reduction Agency. That's what we've got today. And the Defense Threat Reduction Agency does not focus on nuclear weapons. It's more worried about climate change, chemical, biological weapons, all kinds of other things. And nuclear is just one of the many things it does, and it doesn't even do a very good job on the nuclear. So there's been a cultural problem reinforced by arms control, because we are true believers as a civilization in arms control. And there's been, you know, there are more arms control treaties relative to nuclear weapons than there are to any other instrument. And so, you know, the Pentagon, unlike in Russia and China, you know, lawyers in Russia and China, they don't have a lot of lawyers in their military. You know, our military does. We have many lawyers in the military, and they get a big say on what we do and don't do. You know, we have to always check and say, is that legal? Are we making sure we're not violating some law passed by Congress? How about our arms control treaties? Is everything our military doing, is it in strict compliance with the arms control treaties? And real military strategists and real generals, real warriors, don't like to deal with lawyers. And our nuclear weapons, unfortunately, have got legal monkeys on their backs from all of these arms control treaties. And so that makes them also very unattractive. And don't forget, you know, we have the focus of what our military activities have been for decades now has been the war on terrorism. Not even big wars. You know, our focus has been on low-intensity conflicts, fighting small group tactics, the kinds of conflicts and technologies that are involved in fighting the Taliban and ISIS and people like that. Not even on big conventional wars, you know. And only now are we starting to start refocus on saying, you know, China and Russia are back as big actors and big threats, and we've got to refocus on the possibility. On some at the Pentagon, that, you know, these big conventional wars could become nuclear wars. And if you pay attention to how the bad guys think about big wars, they're not just big conventional wars. They're wars that use everything. They use cyber, they use, you know, conventional weapons, but they also use nuclear weapons. And they expect any war, a big war, a World War III that's going to be a fight to the death, is going to be a nuclear war. Mm. And all of their guys are nuclear warriors. You know, from the infantrymen up to their field marshals, they think about war in the nuclear context, and they design their systems for that. The China, Russia, North Korea, the guys we are most likely to take on. So this is what's gone wrong with us. You know, we've it's in our strategic culture, and I think we're disadvantaged when it comes to these totalitarian systems. I may have talked about this in past shows where we've talked about the fact that we are a free society, And nuclear weapons, weapons of mass destruction, are they're antithetical to the ethos of free societies that serve the people. You're We the People Radio, right? We the people. When the most important thing in your society is the people and the preservation of their lives, weapons of mass destruction are antithetical to that purpose. And it's hard to get free, democratic, popular-type governments to be enthusiastic about weapons of mass destruction, you know, because it's not. The totalitarian systems don't have a problem with that, you know, because those weapons are ideal from their point of view. They're an ideal way of eliminating nations which are based on the masses. A weapon of mass destruction is designed to eliminate the masses. Who they fear, you know, who, totalitarian systems whose people like to see the strong man, you know, one man rule, and that their society, is able to prevail over all through force, because of course totalitarian systems, even the people who belong to them, understand that, that strength and force is what keeps them together and what makes them successful in terms of prevailing over their adversaries, as well as maintaining order within the society. That's why they parade ICBMs. You know, they actually love them so much, they put them out in popular parades, celebrate their nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I think that's the only reason any of us know what they look like. I think that's the only reason any of us know what they look like is from their parades.
Yeah, from their parades. Uh-huh. You know, we're embarrassed about the existence of our nuclear weapons, and we're constantly, it seems every year, defending their existence, you know, from all kinds of attackers. And so it puts us at a real disadvantage in the civilizational competition, you know, perhaps it was inevitable that the bad guys would get way ahead of us when it came to nuclear weapons because of this difference in our civilizations, you know, that weapons like that are basically antithetical to the most dearly held principles of our civilization, but they are consistent with the principles of totalitarian powers. And so maybe it was inevitable, and no matter how many arguments and articles I would make, and even if we hadn't gotten rid of the Defense Nuclear Agency, maybe we have been doomed to lose this competition when it comes to nuclear weapons, which is why I have advocated that we need to shift the nature of the competition to space-based missile defenses, to a new type of technological competition that's consistent with our civilizational values. You know, instead of threatening to avenge our dead with the nuclear destruction of the other side, that we need to protect our people with space-based missile defenses that will kill not people, but will kill the weapons of mass destruction that are fired at us, and protect us that way. And because the bad guys will know that we can shoot them down, that they'll be deterred that way from trying to attack us. And this is, you know, this is something that we can do. I believe we still got a technological edge over them when it comes to this kind of system. You know, I think I've talked before about the Brilliant Pebbles system that was ready to be deployed during the Clinton administration, but Bill Clinton didn't do it because he didn't want to break the ABM treaty. You know, George Bush finally did pull us out of the ABM treaty, but then because he got involved with the war on terrorism, he seems to have lost sight of what he was supposed to do after pulling out of the ABM treaty, which was to deploy the Strategic Defense Initiative, the Brilliant Pebbles being an example of one of those technologies that was ready to go back then. This would defend us not just against small nuclear powers, you know, but it would actually be an effective system to protect against a large-scale attack from Russia or China. And this would be a good arms competition if it happened. I wouldn't mind if Russia and China started deploying their own systems. That would be fine, you know, because it would make it harder for anybody to attack anybody else.
Sure.
You know, it would be strengthening the defensive shield on the sides. Right now, the way technology is going, it's getting easier and easier to pull off a nuclear first strike and win a nuclear war and pull off a nuclear Pearl Harbor. I had meant to mention, but going back to a point that you had made much earlier in the show, you had said that you always thought of a warhead as basically being a dumb thing, you know, that it would just be sort of thrown at the target. And you're right, and I verified that, that, you know, basically, you know, a warhead obeys the laws of Isaac Newton. You know, the post-boost vehicle might have has a brain in it, and it knows when to kick that warhead off so that it will follow the laws of gravitation and very accurately go down to target. But that is on the verge of changing. You know, we're on the threshold of a new technological revolution in offensive nuclear weapons that's going to make the situation even more dangerous than it is today, because the a less talked about aspect of the hypersonic warheads, this new generation of hypersonic warheads that's being built, you know, is that not only are these things incredibly fast and fly in flat trajectory so that they can be stealthy and fly under the radar and very hard for us to intercept them, you know, using the current kinds of ground-based missiles. I mean, that's another reason to go to space, because the ground-based interceptors have a very hard time with hypersonic warheads trying to intercept them. But these hypersonic warheads are smart. They're not dumb. And they don't obey the laws of Newtonian physics in terms of following a ballistic trajectory. You know, they basically have a little computer in them, and they can fly. They can maneuver. So they're what's called a maneuverable reentry vehicle. They basically can see the missile silo or the target, and they can achieve incredible accuracies, you know. So in addition to this incredible speed and stealthiness that they have exquisite accuracy, which means that you can take out, for example, even a hardened missile silo with a much lower yield warhead. You know, you could reduce the yield of the warhead to a kiloton or maybe even the sub-kiloton level. We have just started getting into the game. The Russians and Chinese are way ahead of us in hypersonic reentry vehicles.
Now,
Russians have actually started to deploy them.
I'm kind of curious about why we're behind. Not to beg the point of how we seem to not have any interest in defending ourselves. But let's do that right after the break. We've got to take a quick one. I found a couple of fun songs. I thought maybe we should fun it up in case people are all, you know, getting ready to kick the chair out from under themselves, like, don't do it. Don't do it. There's still fun. We'll be okay. But this is all important stuff, and we've got to know, because we're electing people that are making bad decisions.
I love your song choices, by the way.
Well, you're going to really like these, because we know you love this song. It's your favorite one. And then Robert gave us a suggestion for the coming back one that just got crying to be played. So we will be back with that. And our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, you are listening to We the People. And you can always find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Bill.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
I always like to end on a positive note, so here is a rousing, uplifting song which is guaranteed to cheer you up.
When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know.
Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry.
Jeez.
That was crying to be played.
Do you know what era was that? Was that World War II or was that the early Cold War?
This has got to be... 1958 or 59, it was Tom Lehrer, L-E-H-R-E-R.
Hmm. Well, how appropriate.
Oh, it's kind of funny. Somebody wrote in the comments, this guy is just mocking death. He's currently 91 years old. And that was in 2008, so apparently laughing about it kept him alive a long time.
Yeah.
I'll look up the time frame. But yeah, just from his outfit on the YouTube clip, he's got a real skinny dark tie, white shirt, and a jacket. And it just looks, and the horn-rimmed glasses, so it looks very 1950s.
So we were.
Laughter is the best medicine.
Exactly, that's all we've got left.
I saw some clip recently about some French lady who lived to be 129, and she didn't give up smoking until she was in her 80s, and. And she never gave up drinking. She would always have a glass of wine every day.
Attagirl.
She attributed her long life to having the sense of humor.
There you go. Well, look at George Burns. I mean, there's a lot of, you could talk about serious topics without, losing it. So we've got plus or minus 10 minutes. Anything... Bill, you had something in the break.
We were talking about why we haven't upgraded, we even talked about it till now.
Yeah.
We've sat on our hands for the last 30 years. And
is this like the EMP thing? You've been talking about it with a bunch of other people have, and basically everyone's ignoring?
I don't think so, because EMP is rather more esoteric and more hard to understand technologically, and it was also under wraps for, it was classified. The effects were classified in terms of the kind of a threat that it was up until, about 2008 when we declassified the EMP Commission reports. So there is at least a better excuse for our unpreparedness in terms of the civilian infrastructure when it comes to EMP. But we have known, since the first ICBM that was deployed back in 1959, how critical it is, to our defense. And we were rigorous about maintaining the modernity of those systems all through the Cold War. But when the Cold War ended, and we thought it was the end of history, and it's just taken us a long time to realize that the world isn't our oyster, and that Russia and China are back as great threats, and the brainwashing, that has gone on in our universities has also affected our military. And as I said, the difference in our strategic culture, we are not a strategic culture of nuclear warriors. People who think deeply about nuclear strategy and nuclear war fighting are a small, isolated minority within the Pentagon and the Department of Defense. Even in the Air Force, for example, one of the things we never should have done is gotten rid of the Strategic Air Command, which was basically an independent organization for our nuclear warriors, all right? That's what they did. They planned for nuclear war. They got prepared for nuclear war. And as a bureaucracy, they would lobby the Pentagon for resources for nuclear war, for nuclear preparedness. Really, they're saying, I say nuclear war, I mean for nuclear peace is what I should be saying. They're saying was peace is our profession. And that is what their profession is. To be ready for a nuclear conflict is the best way to deter it. The best way to deter any war is to be ready to fight it and win it. And, the Air Force basically hasn't got, when Strategic Air Command got replaced with Strategic Command, STRATCOM is part of the U.S. Air Force, and the U.S. Air Force does conventional war, as well as, you know, nuclear war. But with our long fixation on these terrorist wars, and then, you know, with the new Cold War being back, you know, they like to think of the next war as being a large conventional war, not a nuclear conflict. You know, I mean, to put it crudely, even the Air Force has never really liked the ICBM. You know, what do you do with an ICBM? You've got these Air Force officers who've been taught that being a bomber pilot or being a fighter pilot, that's the acme of your career. They don't want to babysit a missile. And so there's a cultural bias even within the Air Force against the ICBM. You know, the Air Force didn't even want the ICBM to come into existence. There was really a good book written about that. The Air Force back in the 1950s, that's why we were behind the Russians when it came to the development of ICBMs. The Russians understood from the beginning. I mean, it's really just common sense. I mean, here's something that can cross continents, deliver a weapon in 30 minutes. They said the ICBM is the future, you know. The Russians have never cared that much about long-range strategic bombers. It's the smallest part of their combination of nuclear forces. You know, they put everything into MIRV ICBMs pretty much. And they've got ballistic missile submarines like we do. But mainly their planning and their investment is around ICBMs. And they even have a force. It's called the Strategic Rocket Forces. I mean, it's just dedicated to ICBMs. And a field marshal, you know, highest grade officer is in charge of that, who's actually been in charge of their own joint chiefs. It's a complicated combination of these reasons, but mainly it seems to come back to strategic culture, you know, a civilizational difference between us, between totalitarian systems and free systems, you know, the anti-nuclear bias that exists within our system because of the nature of popular mass-based government, democratic governments, and even among the war fighters. The preference, the education, the focus is on non-nuclear wars. Stratcom is starting to try to turn that around. I mean, you know, I think it's been sobering, even to the Pentagon, the idea that serious people who have serious power, I'm not going to call them serious people, people who have serious power, okay?
Like yeah, those Adam are different.
And Elizabeth Warren and the Biden administration are actually thinking or actually talking about giving up the ICBM. I mean, that's like a whiff of smelling salts to the Pentagon. And so suddenly, you know, it's been an all hands on deck thing the past couple of weeks to say, we've got to stop this, you know, because they understand that this would be, It would be losing World War III already.
Yeah.
If we did that, sure, we'd be losing World War III already.
Now, one thing we hadn't mentioned is, don't we have European based nuclear deterrence as well?
We do, but not really. We've got a handful. We've got about 200 obsolete gravity bombs located, scattered across Germany and the Benelux countries and in Incirlik in Turkey. And, they're not uploaded on missiles or on bombers. We'd have to confer with the host governments,
right,
to get their permission to even use them. Okay.
Yeah.
And they have to be delivered by airplane,
to
incredibly dense air defenses. You know, they're really not much of a deterrent, and they're outnumbered 10 to 1 at least by, we have 200 tactical nuclear weapons, and the Russians have got at least 2,000 tactical nuclear weapons that are not just in bunkers. They're actually deployed with their operational forces, they're exercised with them, and they're modern. They're not just for blowing things up. They can do things like super EMP and neutron radiation, specialized defense. And we don't have anything like that in our tactical nuclear inventory.
That's a shame.
Now, we do have, now the French and the British have both got their own deterrents. You know, they're not very big. The French have got a few submarines. The British have got a couple of submarines. You know, a few submarines. They've got enough to keep about one ballistic missile submarine at sea, you know, at the time. And, they're not really tied into our own PSYOP, you know, single integrated operational plan.
Right.
They have those independent deterrents because they don't trust us to protect them, you know. So they've got, I mean, that's the unspoken thing, but that's the bottom line. That's why they have their own nuclear deterrent, because they want to be able to have, be their own nuclear line of last resort. You know, the British and the French don't really trust the American nuclear guarantee enough to not have nuclear weapons.
So the Russians really don't have a lot to worry about as far as an attack from European countries or
oh, no way.
Yeah.
The European countries have don't have enough weapons they don't have to worry about that. Not from the French and the British.
Yeah.
And even from us, when you look at our force, I mean, we've deliberately postured our forces. We did it on purpose we've said it out loud. We don't do nuclear Pearl Harbors. If they read our military doctrine, yes, we do reserve the right to strike first. You know, we do that. You know, we have to as part of the deterrent. And we had to do that because we had planned to use tactical nuclear weapons to stop their tank armies. You know, they still have an enormous advantage in their tank armies. They can overrun the frontline NATO states in 72 hours. So, you know, our way of defending those NATO states is to use tactical nuclear weapons first. But that's defensive. It's not intended. You know, the kinds of forces we have are not designed to do a disarming, war-winning first strike against Russia.
Well, it occurs to me that if you want them to read your article, maybe you should call it "Stop Virtue Signaling with National Security." If you work in the virtue signaling, maybe that'll get
that'll get their attention.
That'll get them reading.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but we are out of time. Yet one more show has passed with our friend Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Thank you so much for spending Mother's Day with us, and tell your wife thank you for loaning you to us for 2 hours.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Dr. Bryan.
Explanation to her when I go back in.
Yeah, tell her. I was just away for a minute.
I should have talked to you last week. It hadn't occurred to me to go with Paul on Mother's Day today.
No worries. Well, we will we will be back with you soon, I'm sure. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.